Yeah.
I have a pitch. When we all clap, the podcast should just end, and that will be the podcast.
Hey, welcome to Creative Block. We're your hosts, V.
And Sean. We interview people in creative industries about their life, work, and hobbies while we doodle jam.
We ask people on our socials if they have specific topics they want us to discuss, as well as some drawing prompts.
Hello, everyone. I am here to ask you a very important question using my space and time powers. Do you like the movie Signs? If you want to understand why I'm asking this, you should watch the rest of the episode, and all secrets will be revealed in due time, of course.
And today's a big episode.
It's a big episode because we have the most guests that we've ever had. We have representatives from Nouns Fest, Eric Towner, Chris Waters, and Walter Newman.
What's up?
There we go. I got through the names. I was worried about him. Yeah.
Dude, after the Chris, I was like, he's going to fumble. He pulled it together, man. Yeah. Did it.
Switch. Ooh, I perform so well under pressure. I'm known for it. Yeah.
I feel like because there's three of us and most people will either be listening or watching the art, that we should just do a quick intro of each of us so that people can tie our voice to our name.
Oh, yeah. Do you guys want to, so note for Clem, so I think we might do the intro now and you're going to cut what we're doing now and you're going to put it at the top of the episode.
So the time traveler. You could do it, Clem. You could do it.
Turn back time. Reverse the order of events.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Let's do it.
My name is Chris Waters and I'm a development executive who spent the last 7 years at Stupid Buddy Studios and I love the movie Signs.
I'm Walter Newman. I'm former head of development at Adult Swim. Before that, I was an executive at Comedy Central. Before that, some other blah, 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 blah. And I'm happy to be here.
I am Eric Towner. I'm one of the co-founders of Stupid Buddy Studios. Happy to be a co-founder of Nouns Fest, animator, filmmaker, director, all of these other things in previous and current lives.
And dad.
Oh, and dad.
I'm dad too. I'm actually been a dad longer than okay, whatever.
Well, dude, I've been a dad the longest. We don't want to start playing that game.
What's this, the dad Olympic? We want medals, first and second place.
Trying to out dad each other?
Sure. I'm going to win them all. I got the most. I got the oldest.
All right, sign up for Dad Fest at dadfest.tv/apply.
It's really great to have you guys on the podcast because it's the first time we've ever interviewed anyone who put together a festival, like an animation festival. And I think, well, not only are you guys working on that, but you also, you're all affiliated with Stupid Buddy Studios, right?
Yeah, and in one way or another, yeah. I feel like we're all pretty connected.
Yes, yes, we are all buddies. We are all buddies.
We're all stupid and buddies.
Yeah, very. We're all definitely stupid.
Of the stupid variety. Yeah,
pretty much buddies.
Can you tell us really fast how you guys met? Because I think that's really cool.
Oh, geez. Okay, I'll give the 20-second version and then you guys fill in all the gaps. So I'm Eric Towner, one of the co-founders of Stupid Buddy Studios. We do a show called Robot Chicken on Adult Swim. Walter Newman, former creative exec at Adult Swim, and Chris Waters, former development head of development at Stupid Buddy Studios. And then beyond that and outside of that, everybody has done a shit ton of stuff.
That's a good introduction. That was fast.
Was that under 20 seconds?
Yeah.
I promised 20 seconds. It might have gone long. Sorry.
Does anybody else have anything you want to add about the way you came to come together?
Yeah, well, we came together for Nouns Fest, just kind of over bonding over animation and NFTs and that whole thing.
And that's a really interesting thing, too, that you... So let me... Like, tell me if I got this wrong. Do you leverage the money from NFTs to help you create and fund more original art? Is that kind of the idea behind the festival?
Yeah, this is always the hardest part to explain about what we're doing because we have to get into the weeds of life. But there is a NFT project called Nouns. So if people go to nouns.wtf, they can see. And that NFT project started in 2021, and it auctions a piece of generative art every day automatically. And the funds from those auctions go into a pool of money. 100% of those funds go into a pool of money that's controlled by the people that have previously purchased nouns. And that's why they call it a DAO. And so no, the founders, nobody ever made money from this. It really is an experiment in community building. So you could put proposals forward to the DAO. One of the proposals put forward was put forward by Towner and Walt and myself and three other members of our little festival to fund a festival. And we thought that would be a great way to put nouns on the map, endear it to artists. And one of the core principles of nouns is like open source. So all the technology is open source, all of the art, everything is open source and free for people to use. So that's what this festival is. It's an open source festival. We're paying the artists, but we're not claiming control or rights to any of their work. And that excited us. We feel like that's a really cool opportunity to say to an artist who usually is working under strict parameters or working on somebody else's show, hey, here's some money. Go make something that just makes you excited. And we won't give you notes. We won't tell you what to do. You get to decide, and then you get to decide what you do with it after the festival as well. So that's why we're here, is we're excited about empowering artists and helping them make cool shit. We all love animation.
Nice. And I think this is a super different, like just up at the top, there's going to be a bunch of artists that hear NFTs listening to this, and they're going to go, ah! So what I want to say and what I want to clarify and get and talk about with you guys is this sounds like a very different way than a lot of the general ways that people are used to NFTs operating, or people scamming other people out of money or whatever. This sounds like a genuinely cool, creative project funding cool art. What would you say in response to that?
I mean, yeah, it's funny. You just say NFT, and it's a very polarizing thing to say and to get reactions from, particularly from the artist animation community. On one hand, it's allowed artists who weren't able to properly monetize their craft and their skills an opportunity to do that through sales of digital collectibles and things like that, which is on one hand. On the other hand, is arguments around the massive amount of power to run the computing and to the scams. I mean, it's just riddled with scams. And in some ways, that technology got exploited by scammers, or there's a lot of excitement that went into it in 2021. And this bubble, I mean, you think of like the dot-com bubble that popped, and it took like 5 years. The NFT bubble grew to 1,000 and popped all within like a year and a half or 2 years. And out of that, like, came the true projects that were true of intention and true of what they were trying to accomplish. So some of those survived through that. Others, like, people like took the money and walked away, and like that was just part of it. And I think part of that has like the negative feelings. But I will say that the Nouns DAO feels like an experiment true in its nature, and one that with the right people and with the right community, and has built a very interesting and exciting community around it, that really cool projects can get made. So the first thing that we were able to do was, our first proposal with Nouns, when we had heard of it, was to put a float in the Rose Parade, which was just like kind of the biggest, silliest, most ridiculous thing we could think of. And that passed, and then we're like, oh great, now we gotta execute on our vision. So we were able to do that and have a documentary that's coming about, about that whole thing. And that's kind of been the foray into, at least on the Stupid Buddy side, getting more involved in the DAO and what it could be, and it will be ultimately a culmination of what the community envisions for it, and what ideas rise to the top.
You mentioned the community around Nouns, and I'm guessing that it's the community of people who buy NFTs, but also everybody involved in like making things happen. How are you guys interacting with the community? Is it like through Discord servers? Is there like kind of a platform, I guess, if that makes sense? I don't know if that.
How can people interact with, yeah, how can people interact with it?
It's a couple ways. Like, most of it's through the actual, like, most of the on-chain stuff happens on nouns.wtf. So that's where people vote. And then, yeah, there's Twitter, there's Discord, there's podcasts, there's like pockets of nouns enthusiasts, because you don't have to own a noun to be part of the community in Africa, in Uganda. in Australia, in New Zealand, in Korea, and it's everywhere. Mexico City, Nouns Amigos. So it's a community that's sort of, and again, like the way it's often described is like, imagine your favorite subreddit animation, mm-hmm. let's say, if all mm-hmm. of a sudden that subreddit had $50 million and you guys could all decide, how should we spend this money? And that's basically what Nouns is it's a sub community. And, but it's all people that kind of believe in this idea of, can you build an organization without a CEO and without like a top-down management? And what does that look like? And as Towner said, we've spent the last couple of years making a documentary about it. So we've gotten to know almost everybody in the community, or most of the people in the community. And that's really what inspired us, was just everyone seems to be in it for the right reason. And I think that that reason is to really help find new ways for people to organize and pursue art, technology, passion, all those things.
Yeah. And to add on to what Chris is saying, like for me, like seeing new methods of distribution, seeing new ways of funding, be it for art, be it for, you know, finance, whatever, it's just the most exciting thing. And it to me, it becomes the coolest thing when it works out. And when you're kind of like pushing the boundaries of things, it's usually when you start finding new innovative art and everything. So
to the most uneducated, like not knowing about NFTs artists who might be curious about it and want to participate in this festival, just on surface level, how does one get involved and how would it work entering or being in it?
So if you want to be part of the festival, go to nounsfest.tv/apply. It's really straightforward, simple and straightforward, the application process. You don't need to give us a resume. You don't anything. All we really want to hear is like, what's your idea and what's your portfolio? So right now the applications are open until I think the end of March. Hopefully you're hearing this episode sometime in March of 2024. I know people discover podcasts whenever. But either way, go to nounsfest.tv. That's where you can apply. And we personally hand review every single submission. We just finished reviewing 300 submissions from all over the world for the shorter form. Those are the kind of 30 seconds plus. And then now the round that's open is for 2 minutes plus.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what's crazy too is that, like, so for me, as in for Sean too, because we've kind of applied to these, like, shorts program that kind of pop up here and there. And we've noticed that the money that is offered by the Nouns Fest is actually really, really good for, like, 3 minutes or for the 30 seconds. I think it's a, like, compared to what's out there, it's a really good amount of money for people to, like, get to produce a short. And I've also noticed the quality is really high. Like, there's a lot of stop motion shorts. And so I guess my question was going to be, when you select someone to do a short, do you kind of also help that person create the short? Do you offer any kind of infrastructure or advice or like a kind of mentoring, or is it more of a, oh, we've seen your portfolio, we trust you to do whatever you do best, here's the money and make something cool?
The latter. It really is like, that's why we're asking to see people's portfolios, and we want to make sure, okay, they can actually execute on their idea. And if we're excited about their idea and we feel like it aligns with their portfolio, then it becomes really easy. And I think exciting to just say, have at it. We trust you. And, you know, in the first season of this that we did last year, we had 17, I believe, original artists. Every one of them delivered. Mm-hmm. Nobody missed their deadline. And you can see those shorts at nounsfest.tv, but they blew our minds. And this time with 300 applications, like, to me, what this shows is like, there is such a huge appetite for this kind of a festival where you're not having to make the short, submit it and hope somebody sees it, but you're actually getting paid to make your own short. Yeah. And, you know, certainly in other countries other than the US, there are funding bodies that support short form, but we don't have anything here. And that's where we saw like this big gap. And so it's just really cool to be able to give an artist that kind of gift. And then they end up over delivering because I think they're just pretty fired up.
Yeah, like,
and just a question about the transaction in the way that normally when shorts like this kind of get made, whether it's working with like on Adult Swim bumpers or with what I don't know, whatever Cartoona or with a Studio Digital, some ones in recent years that kind of fund animators to make their own shorts. Normally, it's sort of like, here's money, now we own the short. How does your process work? Does it get turned in and is owned by the collective, or is it just licensed? Or I'm just curious as an artist myself, if I those, you know, that's what I would ask if I was signing up, I guess.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that's what makes Nouns Fest truly original as far as animation festivals go, is we want to empower the best animators we can by giving them some resources to make a passion project, right? So at the end of the day, we're not asking for any ownership of the film. Like, that retains all those rights retained with the artist. The Nouns experiment is built on something called CC0, or free of copyright, or as Chris has mentioned, like, open source. So for the filmmakers that do choose to like make their film open source at the end of the day, like, just to give it away, there'll be additional awards for that, you know, just something that's encouraged, but is absolutely not necessary. Mm-hmm. It's completely up to the filmmakers what they make, how they make it, when they, you know, as long as it's done on you know, on schedule, then, you know, when they make it. And
that's really cool.
Yeah, and really we want to get out of the way and let the artists and the animators do what they do best.
I feel like the first thing that kind of comes to mind for me when I think of an open source short would be the Blender shorts. So for anybody listening who's like a CG artist, I guess when you go on the Blender website, you can download all of the assets and all of everything that's like the Blender open source short. So I guess maybe like I'm trying to find a concrete way to explain what an open source short could be. Like, maybe it's a thing where like the assets are available for everyone, like the backgrounds, the painting, or, and that's really interesting.
And sorry if we're getting too granular here, but these are things that I know that everybody's going to be thinking. And, mm-hmm. and also I figure like a lot of this technical like stuff, we'll get it out of the way in the beginning, and, you know, it's kind of the elephant in the room stuff. And then, you know, I'm really excited to hear about the making of your documentary and your journey from the beginning of this to now. It sounds like it's grown so much. So this really is an exciting thing. It's cool.
I guess I also had like a little like question to tack on top of it. It's like, so it is a festival. So do you guys kind of do anything like a big screening? Do you hold like an in-person or like digital event to kind of celebrate everybody turning in their shorts? Is there something like that happening?
We absolutely do, and we will be doing that with this program. The program we did last year was, Chris, I can't remember, it was like 18 or 19 filmmakers doing shorts. Yeah. We screened all of those at Brain Dead Studios here in LA. It was really, really great, fun event. And when you have something that where the community is largely online and people may have not met, or some people are completely anonymous, like, the energy that comes from getting the artists together and just getting in a big theater and watching the shit out of this amazing work, it's so energizing. It's so much fun. So we absolutely push for that to be a big part of what we're doing, is that in-person event. So we haven't yet locked our venue in and our date, but this will be likely September, October, and it's going to be great. I mean, this time, instead of 19 filmmakers, we're 50 filmmakers. Yeah. So wow. it's really going to be a very one-of-a-kind event. We're hoping it like culturally has an impact, just based on even the submissions we've already gotten on the short shorts. Like, you know, it's just really encouraging and really exciting to see the talent that has come out and has shown in their excitement and put some really amazing ideas forward. The hardest thing in the world is going to be narrowing this down to just 50 films. It's like, damn, we should have gotten more money from the DAO to make way more films, and hopefully in success and in this being a success, you know, in the eyes of the Nouns community, we'll be able to, you know, our goal is certainly to bring this back and do this again and again.
Yeah, like that. It's really interesting to have you guys building this festival and doing these shorts, because right now the industry is a little it's a little weird. It's a little crazy. So
it's a little silly. It's a little
it's
funky.
A little silly.
You know, like just tiptoeing around like this like massacre. Like you know.
We try to be kind of like we try not to be too doom and gloom on the pod, so people listening to the pod, so we're trying not to crush everybody's dreams. Yeah, it's kind of weird right now, and shorts program are kind of the first thing to go when like the industry is downsizing. Would you say that's kind of correct from you guys' experience?
Yeah, I think a lot of if your funding is coming from the studios, you could see that as something that's a nice to have, not a need to have, is doing shorts programs and things like that. So that again, that's what we're excited about. Like we've worked in the industry for a long time, so being able to identify other ways of just getting really awesome stuff made is super exciting, especially when the industry at large, yeah, maybe not so gung-ho to just, you know, make things like animated shorts, but you know, I mean, we all know that's what makes the world go round. Like literally nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, all of us who went to art school, we're all like, oh, I want to make my big show or movie or small short by myself eventually. Mm-hmm. This is kind of like left field, I guess. But I noticed that in all of the shorts, the characters are wearing the glasses, the square glasses. Can you tell us a little bit about that logo or that
feature?
Yeah, the feature.
Chris, I feel like you're super equipped to take that one.
Yeah, the glasses, the Nouns glasses are the Nike swoosh or well, I don't know, what's another logo? The Adidas stripes. It's the iconic thing that identifies Nouns. I think it was drawn by one of the founders, 4156, Gremplin, who, if you don't follow Gremplin on Twitter, you should, because he's an amazing artist, was like doodling some ducks or something, and then 4156 drew the glasses, and that became the thing that tied all the art together, that and the fact that it's pixel art. So the glasses is kind of the rallying iconography of Nouns DAO. And so for us, it's like, as a nod to Nouns, because they're funding the festival, we're like, you got to have a pair of those glasses in every short. That's really the only requirement, is somehow those have to show up somewhere. And a lot of people, there are now like over 900 Nouns that have sold in the years since it launched. A lot of people go through and they look at all of the different designs, and that kind of inspires them, but they put their own twist on it. That's the story of the Noggles, and they are always looking to the right, looking to the future. That's kind of a little ooh, fun fact.
That's cool.
So yeah,
that's
cool. It's just charming and cute. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fun challenge too. And I think it's nice to have a unifying thing. That's clever.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious about like, I think that we got the abbreviated form of how this all came together, but I'm sure it hasn't been easy, and you guys have been trying to figure out, you know, like logistics and fumbling your way through. Like, I'm curious mm-hmm. about how this goes from like an idea to all of a sudden funding like 50 animators to make shorts, and having this established thing with 900 buyers and having a documentary. Like I'd love to hear a little bit of, you know, from the start, like how did this happen, you know?
I mean, the watch the documentary, because it's a fascinating story. It's like during that time, I feel like 20 years worth of stuff happened in like 6 months somehow, so to recount all of that would be bananas. But yeah, I mean, like when we were going down the Aoki, just what is an NFT, what is a CryptoPunk, why is that important, what does this mean, that's, you know, for me, early days, I came across Gremplin, who is one of the Nounders, and that's kind of what's cool about the foundation of Nouns, is it's four artists and four engineers coming together with this idea that had nothing to do really with greed, but more just like an experiment in getting really interesting things funded. It's an experiment in like, what would people do? What would a community do if they had the resources to do whatever they wanted and greed wasn't one of the deciding factors? And we've discovered that they would have a parade. They would put a float in the Rose Parade. They would fund shorts. They would name frogs. They would do cleanup efforts in weird pockets of the world. And it's just kind of inspiring to see what people will choose to do with money when they can do it. And so when Nouns first came out and that first auction happened, I mean, I couldn't say what it sold for, but it was in the millions. Like, this little pixel piece of art sold for in the millions of dollars. And all of a sudden that money went into a public treasury where the whole world could see these transactions. There's nothing behind closed doors, and there's something really refreshing about that. And so, you know, every 24 hours, another randomly generated piece of pixel art, you know, will go for sale, and those proceeds will go into that treasury, and then the people get to decide what happens with it. So I would say it's still like 2 years later. 2 years later, so much has happened in that space and the world, and you know, it evolves also so quickly. But it's been really interesting to just kind of look back and see what has been made, and now being at the point where we're at now, and being able to have the privilege of funding 50 different animators to make some of the weirdest, coolest shit that they can come up with is exciting. It's cool. So I'll say the experiment is ongoing and is by no way a failure. And hopefully with the right ideas and with the right momentum, it can continue to grow and we can continue to come up with weird stuff to do.
It is really cool to hear you talk about it. Like, almost you have these anonymous benefactors that are like, I'll just buy a little badge of honor almost and just give this money for artists to play around with. That is really cool. And then the fact that everybody can see, because that's something that, you know, isn't very much talked about, I guess. I feel like I never really heard this concept before, that like, oh, well, there's this big pot of money and then everybody can see what's happening with it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, but transparency is one of the hallmarks of blockchain, because everything's on a public server, right? And no one source could edit that server because it lives on hundreds of thousands of computers, right? It's decentralized. And so the promise of this technology, despite all of the chicanery that happened, because there's chicanery anywhere there's money, there's chicanery, is really to empower people to have control over information and not for it to be in a single corporation's hands, right? Where it can be, your privacy can be ruined. And so it's an interesting paradox, though, because on the one hand, it promises anonymity, which I think people are not always comfortable with. But on the other hand, transparency. And I think the idea is, if everyone can see, especially in the case of this money, right, if everyone can see exactly where it goes, there's no hidden agenda, there's no question as to how the funds are being spent, it creates trust, and trust builds community. So yeah.
That is so interesting too, like how like the idea came around. We can cut this if this is like a tricky question, but like, how did you guys react during the whole like crypto crash? Like, was it scary? Was it
like, how deep in were you during that, like into this project?
Yeah.
You know?
We were deep into making the documentary. I'll let Walt and Towner speak for themselves. I don't partake in crypto, so there was no impact to me personally outside of just being like, oh, and we were shielded a little bit because we were so just focused on Nouns. But when the FTX thing happened and all of that happened, it was fascinating as people that were making a documentary about it, but also it was a little scary to think like, oh, what else don't we know about this industry? Mm-hmm. I don't know, Walt, what was your yeah. What was your take on it?
I mean, look, some of the fun is that the guardrails aren't fully on. And then, you know, some of the problem is that the guardrails aren't fully on. What sure. gets me excited is the fact that, like, we're live building the guardrails right now, and everyone kind of has a say. And to your point, the transparency of it all is super fascinating. Having come work from different Hollywood networks and studios and everything, you'll never see that kind of transparency really in any corporation, just to even throw out the Hollywood places. So that is, you know, something that really excited me. But, you know, I am invested a little bit in these places, and I was just like, oh shit, it's fucking crashing. Maybe this was, is this thing what everybody said it was? Like, but if you believe in the spirit, you know, I was excited about the spirit of it. So I kind of, you know, just held everything, huddled, as they say, and everything's bouncing back right now. But it really is to me more about like, hey, in a grander sense, building a new society, even, you know what I mean? In terms of how things can work, it's just super fun. And like, it's something for me, if you're that type of curious person, like, I don't know how you don't want to get involved in something like that as it's beginning, you know?
No, these are great answers.
Exciting new horizon / the Wild West. Like, that's, and for better or worse and everything in between is what I think was experienced really within, you know, a year and a half or 2 years. Like, you know, and I think a lot of the, when it crashed, like what was the good thing about the crash? Well, it's kind of like when the dot-com bubble burst, maybe I'm showing my age, but a lot of the cash grab people or the bad actors got weeded out. They're like, we can't hang with this. We don't actually believe in this new horizon. We're just here to like profit or, you know, kind of scam our way into people's lives. So I guess the good news is it didn't actually affect the Nouns project that much. Like, and maybe these were just the blinders, but
nice.
Like it, like the, like there wasn't some big dip in value or anything like that. And so I think there was, you know, just kind of like, oh yeah, everything else is kind of burning down, but that doesn't really, whatever. We're focused on building stuff and like taking advantage, you know, like trying to build new technologies and new ways for this to happen. So I think it felt inevitable. It just felt like maybe it happened a lot quicker than people expected. And on the backside of that, hopefully there was a reason it happened, and hopefully we can avoid those things in the future.
Yeah. I feel like the knee-jerk reaction for people a lot of the time is to fear change and to be scared of the new technologies and like, oh, is this going to ruin what I'm used to or whatever. But I do like that you guys are taking this new thing and exploring a way to use it for good and in true creative spirit. And like, I mean, the more people that do that, the fewer percentage of people, you know, that are doing it for bad reasons there'll be, maybe. And I think that's really positive. Normally, we ask our guests for like a time where maybe things didn't go so well, or like a fumble, a vulnerability. I feel like it humanizes our guests and it makes our audience, you know, sort of see like, oh, you know, the human side to the people that we have on. Can you think of any, whether it's like a funny thing or whether it's like a moment where you thought things were out of control? And it might be that crash, but I'm curious if anything comes up if I mention that.
I mean, I feel like I've never made a mistake, so this is hard. No, I'm totally just kidding. It's like,
perfect guess. There we go.
How many a day? go ahead, Walt.
Well, there's definitely just times throughout. I mean, I did say my career where you feel like, oh, is this, you know, I was a development executive and head of development and all that stuff. But before that, I was an assistant and a PA. And there's those times where you feel like, oh, this might not work out, and then what will I do type stuff. I remember being assistant on a desk, and even at a certain age, I feel like maybe I was still on a desk maybe when I turned 30, and a lot of people were a lot younger than me, and I remember telling myself, well, I'm still here when I turn 30, I'm gonna fucking quit and go figure out something else. And that day came and I was like, okay, am I really gonna, and I didn't, and you know, stuff ends up working out one way or another. So I think it's just those times for me,
yeah,
you know, where you start questioning is what you do, even what you should be doing.
I think it's when you take a swing, it's hard, you know, like for me, like I went to art school. I went to film school. I worked as an animator, and me and a buddy of mine were like, hey, we should start an animation company. 'Cause how hard could that be? You know? And I think at that time, like I left a pretty deep, like comfortable animation job. I was up to be an animation director on a thing. And here we are, cut to like 3 months later, we're barely making enough, like barely paying ourselves enough to survive. Like, it was like, what's the bare minimum we need to just live? What can I eat to just make sure I don't die and still like make, it's like $50 a month, and you don't want to hear the diet, it's not good for you, but you know, we were like following our dreams. We were like making cool shit in a garage, And, you know, slowly this thing built. But I think there was definitely some times there where we were reflecting like, God, this was a massive mistake. And I'll just say that as, you know, throughout the last 15 years, there's always these moments where you question decisions or, you know, things you're involved with. And I think it always comes back to just making sure that you're working with people that you really like and that you really appreciate and working on things that you're passionate about. Like if you can check those boxes and you can still survive, like that feels like half the battle. And yeah, it is a constant struggle. It's a constant struggle.
Mm. What about you, Chris? Any struggles? Whether it's with this project or before? I think funny stories always come out of this kind of stuff.
Oh well, I'll tell my low point in my career in animation is I was working on Fanboy and Chum Chum. Since we brought up Eric Robles, and
he was on a previous episode. Anybody listening to the pod, make sure you go all the way back and find Eric Robles' episode.
Oh yeah. Eric is a legend and you should definitely listen to that episode. But we were working on Fanboy and Chum Chum, and then I saw I had a studio in New Zealand, and I saw a press release that Fanboy and Chum Chum got a pickup. And at the time my wife worked at a cupcake shop, and so I got like 6 dozen cupcakes and sent them to Nickelodeon, to the whole team. And I just wrote, congrats on the new season. And everyone's just partying and like having the best time. And then pretty soon someone's like, so, hey, how did you hear we got a pickup? And then someone else was like, I don't know, maybe it was Brown Johns, I don't know. And then somehow it got back to the note and it's like, oh, Chris told us. And they're like, well, how would Chris know? And they're like, well, maybe he was talking to Brown or something. And then pretty soon it all came back, and I had read a press release about the season we were already working on, because they put press releases out like way late. And Fanboy and Chum Chum never got that season 3. Oh, no. But the whole team was just so fired up and eating these cupcakes, and I had sent them basically fake news. And
oh,
I was
my God.
So embarrassed, man. I was so embarrassed.
Wow. It's crazy because I thought that it was a new thing that studios were doing, where they would do the press release after the fact, after the seasons were done. You know, like Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were already doing it all the way back. So that's
kind
of interesting. Yeah.
And we were working on it for so long. So you realize, yeah, you're way ahead of, why would they announce it back then, right? They always want to have something right before something comes out. So it made sense why I would have thought, because I just read the press release. I'm like, oh shit, they got a new season. They ordered a new season, you know? And then,
release was wrong.
The press release was right. We were just wrapping up production on that season, and they were only announcing it then, right? You know,
God.
To this point, they probably wanted to announce it so that people would know, oh, it's going to come out like a month or two, right?
Oh my God.
But I thought they were announcing the next season because we've been working on it so long. I'm like, well, that can't be new, old news, right?
I'm trying to picture you like switch gears, like the cupcakes are for doing such a good this time this season, you know?
Oh, no,
like,
dude, there was no switching gears. It was just God, dude, are you kidding me?
Just sad people eating cupcakes is nothing like it, man.
What a roller coaster. I was so embarrassed.
A little peek behind the curtain. One of my biggest and first kind of failures involved Walter here.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, Glaze.
So at the one of the first things that I ever pitched was a cartoon called Fisthead. I was making it with Titmouse first. I storyboarded a 10 episode web series alone, and then before we made that, we pitched that, and so that didn't come out. And so then I pitched it to Adult Swim and Walter here, and it got optioned, and so we started production. You know, we were making the storyboards for this pilot, and it was exciting, and I was like, oh, I have an office, and we have an animation director, and we have a designer and a producer, and like, oh, like I'm a big boy, you know. It was like my first time ever getting into a situation like that. And at the same time, because of how development budgets sometimes are, I was working another job too. I was working at Disney XD on Pickle and Peanut, which was also a very hard production. And within the same 1 week time period, the Fisthead pilot got shelved. And then I got let go from Pickle and Peanut. And I was like so stretched thin, and I was like, like, it doesn't matter how hard I try. Like nothing will work out.
We really like, I mean, I still really like this. And I think you know that because we try, because didn't we do like two different versions? Like we kept.
For sure. For sure.
It was one of those things where you knew you had something, and I'm sure you still feel this way. I still feel this way about that character. And we're like, we're just not like, you're just trying to turn, and then you start as a development executive, you're like, I'm getting too far in trying to make it, and then you're trying to get into it.
Yep.
We did everything. And shout out to Chris Podowski, because I think he just sent me that. Like, I think he knew that, like, hey, Walter's gonna like this, and we did two different versions that were kind of different, and they were both good, and we just couldn't get it across the goal. And sometimes it's timing. I remember talking to Laz about it, and he liked it, and we needed more character. I can remember the whole process.
No, I remember like realizing towards the end that like I think Lazo doesn't really like superheroes. And I hadn't realized that, like, from the beginning, I was sort of setting myself up for, like, a hard battle to begin with. I mean, there's multiple reasons. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't ready. I don't think I was ready. But, like, yeah, man, this is a crazy
It's a fun project. If people haven't seen Fisthead, I'm sure you got it, like, on your IG or somewhere, right? So, you put that character, no?
So there is a little bit of a second life to it that's happening. Yeah. I don't know. But basically, I'm making a Smalls web series has Fisthead in it, and maybe something can grow from there. But so the character isn't dead, but it's switched gears a little bit.
I think that is true though about Lazo. I don't think he loves superhero stuff. We did a pilot called Super Mansion. At the time, it might have been called Uber Mansion before Uber was a thing, and it was like up online. Yeah. On Adult Swims as like a competition, like which of these eight pilots is gonna win like this like March Madness kind of bracket thing. And Super Mansion or Uber Mansion, yeah, whatever, won. Mr. Pickles was number two. Was that right, Walt? And we still didn't get picked up, and Mr. Pickles got picked up. So then anyway, yeah, anyway,
that's
the
crazy
show.
Because I remember that story that Mr. Pickles won the competition, and a lot of people got mad about it at the time because they didn't like that one.
Animation beef.
That's right. It all worked out. I mean, that's exactly what was supposed to happen. Mr. Pickles was absolutely supposed to get made on Adult Swim, and Super Mansion luckily found a home on Crackle.
But there was a lot of superhero. There was so much superhero stuff, and obviously there's still a lot, and they're kind of floating now. And it was just always tough to really like find new ways to go. So we were always concerned because we knew everyone else is making superhero stuff too. And as Adult Swim, we were like, well, we're not supposed to be doing what everyone else is doing. So we're always, you know, trying to obviously flip things a million times and that sort of thing. So it wasn't easy to get superhero.
I think that there was multiple things working against it. I think that there's also, and I don't know if this was intentional, but Tick-Tone is a similar character also. And so, there's like multiple things that like that you end up running into in a situation like that. I'm assuming where you might have a similar character in a different series, you might have a similar subject matter, and sometimes it's like I like that character, but this isn't the right vehicle for that character, but it is hard in the moment to take yourself out of that for sure.
By the way, Tick-Tone, very underrated show. Didn't you end up working on Tick-Tone for a
little bit? I storyboarded on Tick-Tone. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that show a lot.
I didn't know. Me too.
By the way, they made a pilot completely on their own and kind of like developed their own style of animating it. And it's one of those things. So, I mean, even going back to Nouns Fest, it's like always like, you know, I was someone, you know, given what I did, trying to find new animators and new comedy people, like places like Newgrounds and early YouTube animation when people were first making money on YouTube. And it's like, you see all that stuff going away, and that's why I get attracted to like, oh, here's a way to like find new stuff and help people make new stuff because there's not that many outlets anymore, you know?
Yeah, that's my background, and that's the stuff I love too. And in that same sort of vein, I'd like to hear just from each of you, like, why do you care about cartoons? Why do you like cartoons? Why are you doing this?
Why are you doing this?
Yeah. Jeez. What got you into cartoons or making cartoons or
it's
whatever?
It's just in the DNA, I think, at this point. I mean, I remember being a kid and I was kind of a very much a introvert kid, as in my imagination all the time. Loved drawing, loved, you know, all of that. And where I grew up, this is a small town in Colorado. We didn't have TV. I didn't watch TV growing up. So I couldn't, you know, access a lot of really great stuff. And I actually had a friend whose grandma lived in California who had Fox and would VHS record The Simpsons, ship it to Colorado. And it was like mind blowing. So I was like, holy, like, that's they can funny. Say, damn, like, this is crazy. And so just like fell in love with that. And I would actually go over to my buddy's place who had Nickelodeon. We'd watch Ren and Stimpy and like all of these like great shows when I was a kid that were just pushing the limits of what it all was. And yeah, but I mean, for me, it was just like the magic of either making a flip book or when I was, you know, whatever, 13 or 14, like discovering I could animate my toys and bring them to life. Like, it was just the coolest feeling. Like, this is like true magic, is being able to bring life into inanimate objects and make characters and tell stories. So I think is like one of these people that's just very lucky to discover at a very young age, like, this is my this is what I'm supposed to do. And never did I think that would actually be a career, is moving toys around for fun. But feel very lucky to have found a path that involves both these things that I'm passionate about and, you know, somehow turned it into a career. Feel very lucky about that.
I definitely I was watching Muppet Babies and Beavis and Butthead and The Simpsons and was fascinated by all that stuff as a kid. And I definitely came at it more from a comedy angle. I was really obsessed with comedy. In college, I was throwing stand-up comedy shows. So for me, it was always just about like, hey, a lot of this stuff is cool. They're doing stuff like humor-wise and creatively that can't be done in animation, I mean, in live action. And once I became an assistant at Comedy Central was the first time I really, because I didn't go to art school. I just was really into like kind of like studying things I like and who wrote this and who animated this. So I was familiar with all that stuff. But once I became an assistant at Comedy Central, and we were making a bunch of animated pilots. And to be quite honest, at that time, they were making a lot of stuff that just was, I was like, these aren't like, they weren't very good. You start to realize, hey, why does one thing work? Why does another thing work? I remember asking like, well, who's making South Park? Like, because that works. And they were like, oh, no one oversees South Park. And I was like, oh, okay. And eventually getting to Adult Swim and kind of working under Mike Lazo, it kind of takes everything to another level of how you're looking at, you know, everything from a storyboard to animatic. So it becomes a process of just, to me, trying to help facilitate something cool, getting out into the world, you know?
I love animation. I grew up with no TV. I wasn't allowed to watch TV. My parents were strange, so we just had a library in the house. So the only thing I could do was read comic books. And so that's kind of my way into animation was, it was just, I grew up and loved comic books. And then my parents had a bunch of graphic, like Gustave Doré books on Paradise Lost and all these things. And so I was just fascinated. And then when I did get to see movies, it was animated movies. And then, so that's, I think I had a predisposition to just graphic art. And so that led to animation.
That's great. I relate to the like TV thing. Sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit of a hack because I didn't really grow up watching a lot of cartoons. And I'm like, what am I doing in cartoons?
Maybe it's like someone who was like, you're not allowed to have this candy. And then when you're like 12 and you gain access to the pantry and no one's watching, you just eat everything. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've definitely felt that way, where I feel so behind on pop culture and just all the references. And also I wasn't allowed to play video games, and I'm just horrible at video games now. And I feel like that's terrible that my parents didn't let me. I think I've always felt a little, especially like, you know, I've spent the last 7 years at Stupid Buddy, and I'm around these, like, the people there are so tapped into every genre, every decade. Towner's constantly pulling the most obscure references to things, and I'm always having to be like, oh yeah, no, let me just Google that shit real quick and figure out what the hell anyone's talking about. So I think I always felt a little insecure about my lack of knowledge, and then at Super Buddy I felt insanely insecure, especially with Seth, who just knows all things TV.
Yeah, that makes me feel better. Because I feel like also, I don't know, sometimes I feel like I had to like play catch up, just kind of like watching a bunch of stuff, knowing what's on, what people are like. Because I don't know, there's, I don't know, there, I guess I used to be like in that mindset of like kind of like a hipster, quote unquote, where it's like, no, I only want to know the things that nobody knows. And it was like my personality. And then it's like, yeah, but then nobody can connect to that. So if you're trying to make
It's
content,
a balance. It's a
right?
balance. There's
Right?
value in both.
Exactly. I think, yeah, it's important to be tapped into a little bit of both. I wonder, like, we do ask this question to all of our guests. Podcast is called Creative Block. Have you guys, each of you, experienced creative block? And if you did, what did it feel like and how do you deal with it?
Yes, of course. And I think a lot of it just comes from your own insecurities or anxieties around, like exposing yourself creatively, and a lot of ways around it. I mean, I think a lot of it is, at least for me, I actually feel like deadlines are fantastic, and even self-imposed deadlines are fine, but when you have like legitimate deadlines, it's like, well, okay, you can procrastinate because you're insecure about something to a certain point, and then you just gotta like trust your instincts and go with it. So sometimes I find myself in this place of like not sure what to do, kind of putting something off, but knowing there's a deadline looming, and then just kind of like let it rip in a way. But really, I mean, other ways to get around it, I mean, as an artist is like you almost have to treat it as you're making something for yourself and nobody else. And then when it comes time to like showing people, that's the hard part, is like getting that out there. So I guess this is a long rambling answer that probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but yeah, like when you get blocked up, you just have to trust your instinct. And sometimes you just have to work through some garbage ideas or moments to get to something that's actually good. And sometimes that great moment will come when you least expect it or even see it coming. But as long as you're in a routine of constantly doing something, then that's just part of your routine. That's like part of your habit stack. So just keep going.
I have three surefire ways to get through creative block. One is I watch the movie Signs. I don't know why that movie, but sometimes I watch
What?
that
Wait,
movie.
what? As like a source of inspiration, like, hey, they made this movie,
Wait, like
like
every time you do
every time. Dude, I've watched that movie like four consecutive times in one day
it?
once. I don't know why,
What?
but I guarantee you guys, watch the movie Signs and you will break all
Just
your creative
watching it over
block.
and over again until you don't have creative block. And for some reason, all my ideas are about aliens.
I think going on walks is a good one. And then I think just another hack, I think, is to tell yourself, okay, I'm going to write the worst thing I can write in the next 15 minutes. And somehow that frees you up to just not feel like it has to be perfect or good. It's almost like you're intentionally sabotaging yourself and writing something terrible. But then invariably something will come out of that because it's not something you would have thought about naturally. And so I think even though you're kind of fooling yourself, I think that's a super helpful exercise, is just taking all the pressure off and being like, I'm just gonna write something shitty or draw something shitty. And somehow not having an expectation frees you up.
Yeah,
Yo,
shitty
shout
first
out to
draft.
shitty drawings.
Exactly,
I love it.
exactly.
Shout out to Sign.
Shout out to
Shout out to
Signs, M
Signs.
Night. M Night.
And
You
science,
know I'm here for you, M Night. Walt, what do you do?
I mean, to piggyback off Towner, for me, it is really just having kind of like a good routine and deadlines, and then just kind of like some form of an irrational belief that, hey, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. And then sometimes it doesn't. And you're like, oh, and then you gotta be like, it's gonna happen now. It's gonna happen next time. And so, yeah, to me, a little bit of an irrational belief that we're gonna get through
That's so funny because I feel like that's the first time. Well, Signs was the first time we heard it mentioned, but also like the like.
For some reason, we've got that's the most common answer that we've gotten. And that's the creepiest part. It's not even Signs itself.
That's causing it. They probably signed up to my
Oh, come
newsletter.
on.
Signs.
I just can't believe we watched that movie 4 times in one day. That's not actually, I just can't believe that. As like a way of like breaking through something creatively. Oh, I just need a little bit more Signs. Like, just one more, just one more. I'm on.
I think, well, you're not like it's almost like it's comfort. It's just comfort that it's there. and it's on. And then I think I really like the soundtrack too.
Can you remember what the revelation was after building up that the four signs in a row, like special move combo attack? Like what your bar was filled with signs, and you remember what the solve was? Like how what you came up with?
I don't know what it is. I think it was just one day I was watching it while I was trying to write something, and then there was just like a comfort to the sound of that movie, and I just kept restarting it, and then I was like, all right, well, science is
you're
it.
Like, oh, if we only had something to take down the villain of this show I've been working on. It's water. It's Chris Waters. Oh, now I get it. I hate
water.
Like the dumbest movie ever.
I'm invincible to them. I am their weakness.
This is an ego boost.
That's got to feel good.
I feel so good.
They're just committed to the performance. I bought it. And I was actually super scared. And I was so relieved when I saw it, you know, and it was like, okay, I don't have to be good. Terrified anymore.
Okay, so it's also like overcoming your own fears during those four movies. Yes, and you're like, by the end, it's not even scary to me, dude.
yeah. So, I mean, if I can overcome that, I can overcome creative block.
Creative block isn't even scary to me anymore.
And that ties back into the faith that things will work out that you were talking about, Walter. I think it was really interesting that you have to kind of like trick yourself into believing it's like completely. Being confident that the idea will like
1,000%. Yeah, it's literally just tricking yourself and then just being like, and then even when it doesn't, then you still trick yourself again to be like, oh yeah, well then there's that and it doesn't work out, but then it does. And it's like, you just keep doing it and then you die.
Shout out to routines, tricking yourself, deadlines, tricking signs, yourself. And bad drawings.
Yeah, yes. And then you die.
That's a good lineup.
Yeah, and that's how you can come up with your pitch for Nouns Festival before the end of the next 2 weeks.
It's all going to be Nouns. It's all going to be science parodies. Yeah. They're like, we have a surefire way in. He's going to say yes.
Chris will definitely vote for this idea. I would 100% vote for a science parody. So
you got at least one
you heard first hell here. Yes,
and then two hard passes. So you know.
Do you guys ever kind of like fight over submissions? You don't
I
have
fight
to
every single one. Every single one. I'm fighting.
True. Yes. True. Yes. In fact, today we spent an hour debating the submissions. It's fun though because you take a second look at something that maybe initially you didn't like, or you see something in someone's portfolio that maybe you didn't catch. So I think the fact that we go through the process and every single submission we talk about, so I think that has been one of the most fun things and really incredibly inspiring, just how many people put forward so many good ideas and so many people went really above and beyond even in their proposals. Mm-hmm. So there's just so much talent out there. It's so crazy to think about how much talent there is and how many incredible people work in this industry.
Is one of you more picky than the others, or is one of you just like everything and it's like,
Walt,
come on guys.
Walt statistically passed on more things than anybody else, and I think I might have liked more things than anybody else.
That's good.
Towner's somewhere in the middle. Yeah. Towner was pretty picky too though.
There's the Simon Cowell.
Well, Walt's nice about it, but it's more, and then Walt, I think having been at Adult Swim as long as he was, has a good instinct for maybe the non-obvious things or
problems
that
will arise.
Interesting. And yeah. Or just the non-obvious things that like maybe other people might overlook. You know, I think that's a big part of why Walt's such an invaluable part of the team, and Towner as a director, same thing. It's just being able to maybe catch something that might have cut through the cracks in another setting that we want to make sure there's like a real diverse form, diverse tone, diverse audience. In our first thing, we had something that someone made with their four-year-old son, which was adorable and cute. And then we had stuff that was, you know, stuff you would see on Cake or Adult Swim, right? That's a really fun part of Nouns, by the way, is because it's not a brand controlled by a corporation, it can be more malleable and elastic. And so, and there's a charm and comedy to the glasses, so I think that inspires people to be able to kind of play in a lot of different spaces.
Yeah, the brand like gets defined like every day as we go along. And that's one thing that's exciting, even with the festival. Like, it starts to define itself, and we start to say, hey, it feels like this. But then we actually are able to just to watch it happen and kind of let that direction take hold.
How would you describe, and this question might mostly be for Walter, but it might not, but it might be for everybody. How would you describe, like, honing that ability to look at something in a rough stage or a pitch and be able to use your imagination to fill in the blanks and imagine, like almost like it's like having that like truffle pig nose where you're like, all right, I can smell something here. There's something that has potential. Like, what's that like? Because I don't know if everybody has that. I don't know.
Well, I do think it's something maybe you start and you don't know where it is, wanting to find new stuff or be the first to see something. And then being fortunate enough to at some point I'm like, I've taken probably more pitches than a lot of executives in Hollywood, and I've seen a lot of stuff and I've been doing it a long time. So you do start to notice it. And a lot of weird stuff, but like, and I was always like, you know, the first big thing I did when I was at Comedy Central was a show, Workaholics, and that was from finding stuff on YouTube. So I was always just like looking at a mass amount of stuff. So you do start to find like, oh, that's original, or like, hey, they're making stuff and it's not funny, but this one person's really funny, or when they do this thing with this one character, that's really interesting. They should lean into that. So I think it's just inhaling a lot of material, which I still do every day, from reading stuff to watching stuff, and kind of forming your, it's really forming your taste based upon kind of your life experiences, really. And like constantly reminding yourself to tap into that, you know, and like not just, there'd be times when I find something I enjoy and then I forget that I was like an executive and I could actually do something and like, oh, maybe we should help this person. But it was really just like, oh, this is the next thing. Like, oh man, I wish someone would make a TV. I was like, oh, I can do that now. Like, so it was a lot of that. Yeah.
As someone that's pitched Walt many times and only got him to say yes once, I have to say,
is that true?
Yeah, yeah. I know what it's. I feel the pain of all these artists. I was on the other end of that. But it is. It's super fun too, because we all have the ones that nobody else has picked, and that's what the last few sessions have been, is just getting to pitch, kind of go to battle for the shorts that you think
that's really
should
cool.
be part of the festival, which is really, really fun.
How did you kind of like try to convince each other that like that's the right pitch? Do you kind of like, do you do your own pitch on
for sure.
the pitch?
A little bit. A little bit is like, we just show, like today, I think a lot of it was just looking back at the reel, looking back at the pitch, and sometimes just getting a second look through somebody else's perspective is enough. I think Walt today was showing something, and I think part of it too is just like his belief in it also made me say, okay, well, I see where he's coming from, and you know, you want to make sure there's a lot of voices in this, right? So you might be giving up one that you would otherwise pick, but you trust your partners.
Yeah. And it's tough when you're on this side of it. Mm-hmm. Like there, you know, even for the shorts, like having over 300 submissions, and we all, you know, have jobs and other things. So you just got to jam through them. And so I will say, like, there's a first blood, like, so going back through them, you'll see a lot of things you may not have seen. But I think just as an important part of pitching, it's like, try to get your hooks in early and, you know, show something up top, or, you know, Walt's really great at going through the stories, reading the stories, getting deep on that. And you really, you feel the work and the effort that went through it. So I think we definitely feel this obligation to make sure we give everything a really honest look. But yeah, I mean, some people will start by looking at portfolio. Others will be, you know, start by looking at the pitch or reading the pitch or whatever it might be. There's just different ways into it, but it's a really impressive amount of stuff that we've been able to see. So it's
really cool.
It's really quality. But you know, we got to go from 300 on the short shorts and get down to, I don't know what it is, 35 or something like that. But it's great. Like we get to hand out 50 green lights. Like that feels good. Like that's going to feel good.
Yeah. All the great animated shows start as shorts generally in some form or fashion, be it even if they're commissioned as TV shows, but it's like, oh, we're going to make 3 minutes to see if it works. So, or it's just like, they all start that way. So that's what's really, really exciting, because we know these are how like very big things start. And so it's like my favorite place to be is on like the ground level, watching people kind of come up with this stuff.
Yeah. And that was a big part. The first round that was, it was just like, okay, shorts got to be at least, I think, 15 or 30 seconds. And that was one of the only requirements, but that was part of wanting to get 2 to 3 minute shorts in this round, and having, you know, the quote unquote tall shorts be a part of that was, to Walt's point, like, let's really dig into character and story, because maybe there is something here. Maybe there's something within this group of pitches that, you know, goes on to be that next thing. And you just never know, but giving people the opportunity to make shorts and have creative freedom. I mean, so many great things. Like, all, I think every single show we've talked about that's an animated show did start with a short. You know, whether it be Ren and Stimpy, mm-hmm. or South Park or Simpsons, yeah. even Robot Chicken, Rick and Morty, all this stuff started as shorts in one way or another.
Crossing there swords, shout out Harf.
yeah, and by the way, with the artists being able to kind of like own their project in a different way, like I mean, we were bringing up Mr. Pickles, and the artist behind Will, yeah. behind Mr. Pickles designed the logo for Liquid Debt. Like, some of this stuff, I like being in a space where a show's not the only goal. Like, a show on Netflix or HBO, sure. or Adult Swim is not the only goal. It could be something for YouTube. It could be something that lives as a logo and all these different things. So it's just like getting around talent, and there's a ton of it that we've been looking through. Like, and like Tanner was saying, it could be from the art. It could be from the story. It could just be from the way you're approaching a particular character. Maybe it's a superhero. I don't know.
No, I think that this brings up a really good segue, which is, like, as you are reading over these, is there anything that you'd like to say to potential people that are going to submit, as far as what's some advice on how to catch your attention? What are you looking for? What kind of ideas are you looking for? Or what presentation catches your eye?
I mean, look, you could, like, story-wise, it's always something when you're speaking to something that's very specifically yourself, or something that you just have a real, like, high level understanding of, be it how to milk a cow to how to build a rocket. Like, when you can get in the weeds but make it kind of like accessible, it's always fun. Art wise, like, for me, comedy, and we always talk about, you always want to see something that looks cool, but kind of like, I mean, if you're looking at Beavis and Butthead or South Park, comedy, if you're going that direction, it can kind of look like however you want, but it has to work and feel fun. Like, these things have to work together.
Yeah.
And not all our stuff is, I keep talking about comedy just being my background, but some of our stuff is like, I mean, there was one, I don't even know if it got through today, but that was kind of like more horrorcore that I was super into. And it was because, one, yeah. we don't have a lot of that. And two, it was doing something that I hadn't really seen much of before. So you want to, that's what I encourage people to do, to really kind of get into that space and speak to themselves with something they would want to see and bring that out, you know?
I think another thing, just especially with these longer ones, it's just because there's not that much time, just making sure there's a really strong character dynamic, you know, because we're mm-hmm. going to live with these characters for a lot longer than the short shorts, where I think a lot of that you can get away with, you know, like a very mm-hmm. simple setup, and it's more of an experience than a story. So character, I think Nouns has a certain personality to it. There's a certain vibe to Nouns. And I think sometimes it feels like people are submitting ideas that were like, this is something I've been thinking about forever. I'll just throw in Nouns, right? And so you can yeah. kind of tell when it doesn't feel original. I think when it feels a little bit like somebody's just been thinking about this idea and they tacked on something. So I think even mm-hmm. if you have an idea, just making sure however you're incorporating the Nouns element into it, that feels organic and sort of inspired and not just tacked on. But again, that doesn't, not to be prescriptive mm-hmm. there's so many ways people have surprised us with that. So yeah, those are some of the things.
And what is, how would you describe the Nouns element? Like, is it something beyond the glasses? Is there like a certain spirit, or like a certain more concrete way that somebody can incorporate Nouns into
it's called being nounish. That's as much as I can tell you.
Yeah. You nailed it. It's like one of those things you kind of know it when you see it.
you gotta be nounish, and I guarantee you that'll get through, because you know, like, these guys have been in it longer than me, but it's one of the fun parts, like I said, this thing is kind of defining itself, and I do think nounish is the best way I've heard to define it.
I think that just look at the art. It's like, it's kind of ridiculous and silly and inventive, and so I think surprise and charm and generosity of spirit, all these things, it's just like you kind of just feel it. You feel it when you see it, and then sometimes you're just like, oh, somebody just kind of fired this off. And so, like, I'm telling you, these pitches, they're just so much talent. So it's like, really, really give it thought and deliver something awesome, you know. And I promise you, we will read it, and we will debate it, and it will be seen. So it's worth doing
for sure.
Do you have have you been like surprised by any of how the pitches were presented? I'm asking this question because I feel like Sean and I, we come from like the industry. We've been we've seen these kind of like three pagers floating around where it's like you start with your log line and then the world and then the characters and blah, blah, blah. Have you ever gotten like a pitch for Nouns Fest where it was like they kind of broke all the rules and it was kind of fun, or like has anything kind of stood out in some kind of way?
There was one from a director, and the pitch was like three words, and he said, you could read all this or you just watch this video. And then you click the video and he's like sitting in a dark attic with like a single light source hitting his face, and he starts to describe the story. As he's describing the story, then he cuts to, and he's actually like built some of these assets, and like there was just no question this dude knew exactly what he wanted to do. And then you're like, well, I gotta look at this dude's reel. And then you look at the reel, and it's just you're like, okay, this person had such a confidence.
Real high level filmmaker. Cool. It was a real high level filmmaker, yeah.
yeah. Like, it just immediately we were like, oh, and each of us discovered it individually because we're watching all these by ourselves, and I'm sure we all had the same reaction. We're just like, oh my God.
Is this going to be a snuff film? What's about to happen to me?
What? Dude, I was fully immersed. I was like, let's just let this guy do a 2-hour thing for the festival. Yeah, it was amazing. But people have done animatics, people have done storyboard pitches, people have done just text, and then a killer piece of art, like a single piece of art. And then, so it's been everything. I don't think there's one way. We don't have a bias. Like, as long as the idea gets across and it's strong and your work is good, then you got a great
shot.
You never know
how stuff can start. But yeah, like I've seen stuff start from a tweet to a show. So it's like,
How Nouns started. That's the inception of Nouns, is a tweet. You know, and then here we are, you know, making films. But it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy, like, what that seed is for something that eventually grows and blossoms into something else. But yeah, the pitches are wide and varied, and, you know, they're elaborate. Some are not. You know, I think one of the pitches, which is maybe on the fence a little bit, was like, these two characters are going to, you know, I can't remember what it was. It was like a sentence. It was like, and I don't know how it ends, but it's going to be fucking cool. You know, and you look at like,
but somebody also pitched this and said, I've been super busy this week, but I didn't want to miss the deadline.
Oh, right.
and then it was just like, yo, man. Oh, it was funny. It was funny. It was good.
Yeah. And some really entertaining pitches, though. It's great just going into the pitch process itself, because you just, it's a great question. I mean, there's not a prescriptive formula to what makes a great pitch. And I think having just creativity and maybe breaking some rules there is like not necessarily a bad thing. But
you really just have to catch one of the six, and then it will really hit the table for
It's just got to be based on signs, like M. Night Shyamalan signs. That's
your way in. No, what makes a good point, though? Like, some of these shorts that are going to get through, it's not like it was 5 out of 6 or 4. It's not majority rules. It really is like, if somebody is passionate, it only takes one person, and then they just have to convince one other person. And so that way it's not Like, I think that's going to get us a more interesting festival, and it inspires us to kind of fight.
And we do very much want this to be a festival for everyone. Like, you don't actually need to have worked on X or made something. Like, you could literally be a student that's talented and passionate, has a great idea, and still get through. And we want this to be as global as possible. So we've got filmmakers from all over the world that are submitting and participating, and definitely want this to feel that way.
Yeah, we're not looking at resumes.
And the festival itself is going to be very fun.
Yeah, festival. Yeah, that is going to be very fun. And we're hoping as many of the artists can be there as possible. You know,
we're pushing to fly people in.
So. Yeah.
We'll see.
Oh, yeah. Very cool. Yeah. That is awesome.
Fingers crossed. No promises, but we're going to do our best to get
No
everybody.
Promises, but if you're in, you might get a free trip to location to be determined.
Yeah.
That would be sick.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I was like pleasantly surprised, I guess, with like the amount of stop motion shorts that you guys got, because stop motion is really hard to make. It's time consuming, yeah. It's costly, but it looks absolutely amazing. And that's why for a second when I watched some of the shorts, I was wondering if you guys in any shape or form at Stoopy Buddy were helping out, because I was like, oh, I was so interested that you had so many stop motion films.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how that worked out the first go around. And we are still getting so many pitches in stop motion, and some are just fantastic. I mean, I have a particular affinity for stop motion just because that's part of my background and having worked as an animator in that field. But it is very accessible too. Like, I know if you can't draw, you can sometimes move a puppet around. So, you know, it is accessible in that, especially these days, that if you do have a camera in a corner of your house or apartment or whatever, that you can just light and make a thing, or, you know, put on a down shooter, it becomes very accessible and very practical. Like, the things you're building, and it does take a lot of effort too. So there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into that craft. But I've been, just as a fan of stop motion, very pleasantly surprised by the amount of submissions that are taking advantage of it and really doing stuff with it that you hadn't really seen before. So very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, a
lot of styles.
I can say this is the most, the submissions we're getting now, it's the most like differentiated amount of stop motion like I've ever seen at like one time. I've been blown away by how many people are kind of like in that medium.
I have a theory too that stop motion animators, a lot of them do tend to have passion projects that they're working on, and they can kind of do things from conception all the way through to completion. So it feels like there is this community of stop motion artists that has probably been dying for somebody to give them permission to do something that they want to do and not a commercial or something else. So that's my theory, because I do think from the percentage of people that actually work in animation, we definitely outperform with stop motion. It could be that people are seeing Stupid Buddy's affiliation too. I don't know.
Right. But
that's my theory anyway, that a lot of these artists are used to kind of making their own films all by themselves, and this lends itself to that for sure.
Well, yeah, it's cool to see. I mean, I know that that it's like, compared to other forms of animation, I think that there, at least in the studio system, there's less stop motion shows, and this seems like a really good venue for. I feel like there's probably some stop motion animators that feel kind of pent up creatively, and they're like, I just want to, you know, make a thing, you know, and so and get paid to do it, and that's really cool. And I'm just stoked that they have a way to do it through y'all. I think that's really, really tight.
Yeah, but there's CG, 2D, mixed media, cardboard cutout. We've kind of seen everything you can imagine with these pitches.
We have finger puppets. Last year we had finger puppets.
That's right. Sam Cotton. Shout out Sam Cotton.
That's really fun. Would you consider something like puppets to be animation? Or
Oh, really cool.
I never really
in the first season there was one that was the existential crisis of a baseball in a public restroom or something like that, and that was all puppet. But yeah, I mean, we, having again been a Stupid Buddy for the last 7 years, we love us some puppets over there, so definitely consider an animation.
Oh, they're great. I was always wondering if it was like live action, because in the way it's like film, but in a way it's also animated, because you're giving life to something that doesn't.
That's how I see it. That's how it's I see really it. I'm sure there'll be many that disagree. But
and is that live action or animation or whatever? But it's creative, and you're making characters from from scratch, so feels like it fits.
Argue in the comments.
I need to know what Jim Henson
argue
says.
In the comments. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna
topic
say.
Of hot debate, please.
Yeah, let us know in the comments what you think.
Put a survey up.
But then you have hybrid, right? Where you have live action backgrounds, or maybe there's a person, but you have animated characters, and then like whole other topics of debate.
Because I was wondering, it kind of made me think when you were talking about this pitch about this guy that had like three words, and then it was like him in the attic and all of that. It made me think a little bit, or at least the way you were talking about it, it reminded me of an animator on YouTube who doesn't like per se animate, like, but he edits his videos, like he films himself and he edits his videos in a way that it feels animated. It's like edited to an amount that it's not live action anymore, if that makes sense. I want to see
this. Kind of interesting. I'm so curious who this person is. Now I gotta check this out.
So is he like doing himself in stop motion, or like what are you? I'm confused.
Almost. Pull up his name, because
he's like cutting frames.
Yes, he's cutting a lot of frames, and he's doing a lot of James Lee. I don't know if you guys know James Lee.
Well, that's shout really out cool. to James Lee and the and the James Lee tangent that we're pitching you, James Lee.
Submit to Nouns Fest. We will absolutely qualify you as animation. I only clicked and watched 5 seconds of something. I was like, this is cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I think, like, who's to say what animation is? Like, this is the whole point of the medium is to push storytelling forward, and there's just so much you can do. So I think we should have the broadest possible definition of animation. We definitely do for the festival. So
it's good to know.
Challenge us, people.
And if you do submit, if you're a viewer and you submit, we would love to know if you submitted. Let us know if this reached you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say hi to us in the comments.
Hi to us in the comments. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast. This was so fun. I think there's like so many like interesting, different like themes that we touched on. Not just like obviously NFTs and crypto, but also just like art, creating, pitching, and all that. And I think this is a really really fun and our first episode with three guests.
First and
we talked over each other with limited amounts.
First and hopefully not last, based on our technical difficulties at the beginning. But here we are. We made it.
It was great. Everything. There was no technical difficulties, guys.
Yeah.
If you're listening, all these people that you heard, they're all experts with the computer, and they didn't buy any of the technology.
It was easy. You're right.
Thanks, Clem.
Thank you guys for doing such awesome drawings too. It was fun to watch these drawings emerge and to contribute a little bit, and then see you draw on top of my drawings and be like, oh, that's even better. that was really fun.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks so much for having us. This is really, really a delight.
No problem. And let us know if there's anything else you want us to include, whether it's in the description so people can help find you easier. And
I guess we've been plugging Nouns Fest the whole episode, but let's hear the best ways we can watch all of the shorts and submit.
Sure. So if you're interested in being part of Nouns Fest, go to nounsfest.tv/apply to watch the shorts from the first season. Go to nounsfest.tv and you'll see a link. And to find out more, just go to nounsfest.tv. And submissions are open until March 31st, so get your submissions in. They will be hotly debated. And also, if you're listening, go and sign up for the newsletter, so you'll be the first to hear where the festival is, how to get there, who's going, what films are going to be there. So do all that.
Yeah, do all that. And also because it sounds like you guys want to keep it going for as long as you can, right? So there's probably most likely going to be like another year of it after this year.
That's the goal. And also, I think there'd be a really cool, another cool outcome from this is if we figure out a marketplace for shorts. And, you know, I think that would be incredible. So that's one of our goals as well, is to figure out, like, is there a way to package all this up and get it in front of as many people as we can? And, and so that's part of our journey as well, not just a physical festival, but making sure everyone from all over the world can watch these shorts in a,
Yeah, I think that will help.
And the artists get exposure. Absolutely.
I mean, that's part of us, is exposing amazing artists and talent up and coming, or whether you're established or not. So we want to shine a spotlight on the films, on the filmmakers. There'll be, you know, for those that are interested in behind the scenes and making of and process, like, there'll be this type of content leading up to the festival. And just stay tuned for more details on when the festival is going to happen. We're loosely circling it being here in LA, for those that are in LA. It's a great place to just get the industry involved and excited. And yeah, I think success for, again, the festival is just getting as much amazing content made and then viewed by as many people as possible. And I think that just, you know, to the Nouns community and those that are backing this, I think that will, you know, bring a smile to their faces and then put us in a good position to hopefully continue to do more and more of these in the future as well.
Thank you guys. This is such a great podcast. Yeah. and you guys are awesome for doing it. And I think the drawing during it is such a cool idea. And that made it,
it's so tight. Yeah.
That made it so fun. I was so bummed when my iPad battery died and I was in the middle of something. I was like, oh man.
Thank you guys for coming on to the show, and also thanks to our listeners. Follow us on social media at CRTV Block, where we ask for drawing prompts and questions to ask our guests. Huge thanks to our editor Clemens for editing the podcast and reversing time in the order of things, Marco for helping us produce the show, and Ibuka for creating the short clips that we've been putting out.
If you love our show, then you can support us on Patreon. Becoming a patron gets you early access to interviews and access to our Discord community. Another great way you can support us is to interact with our content. Like, subscribe, comment, all of these interactions. Tell the algorithm that our content is great and it will put it in front of way more people to watch. And click the link in the description of this episode to apply to Nouns Fest and look at everybody's social. I have been your host, V.
And I was Sean. Keep being creative, and we'll see you next week.
Bye!